This meeting is being held on April 16th, 2020. And I want to welcome staff, Greg Trapp and his staff, and Bob Reedy and Urja Lansing, members of the commission, are on the conference call. Go ahead, Greg.
All right, Mr. Chairman. So because we're doing this by telephone, all of our votes will need to be roll call votes. And we are ready for a roll call.
All right. First is Urja Lansing.
Present.
Robert Reedy.
Present.
Arthur Adolphus Schreiber. Present. All present and accounted for.
Mr. Chairman, we're now at introduction of guests and staff. It's great to have folks participating by telephone, although it's unfortunate the underlying circumstances that we're all dealing with here. So, guests, I am obviously present, Greg Trapp. Jim, introduce yourself.
Yes, sir. Jim Salas, Deputy Director with the Commission. Good morning.
Kevin.
Kevin Romero, Deputy Director with Commission.
Lucy, are you there? Lucy's not joined us. Kelly, introduce yourself.
Good morning. This is Kelly Burma. I am the Skill Center Coordinator.
And Trish?
Trish Adams. I'm Executive Secretary.
And Audrey?
Audrey Trujillo, IT Systems Admin.
Right. Any employees, staff who I've not mentioned here? All right. So, John, our Assistant Attorney General, introduce yourself.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Jim, is there a mute? Is there a button to push?
No, sir. I can only mute the whole, everybody.
Okay.
Everybody or nobody. People can mute themselves with a star 6 to mute themselves, and then they use star 7 to unmute their own line.
Okay.
Okay. You know, Jim, I think that's how in the past we've gotten...
Yes, exactly.
You hit star 6 the second time, that kicks you off.
So, right.
All right. John, Brian Kemp.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Greg, and members of the commission. This is John Krankamp, counsel to the commission. Happy to be here.
All right, John, welcome. I appreciate your being here. Anyone else, any members of the public who are joining us here? All right. Sure, I believe that is all the staff and guests. Kevin, anyone else from Santa Fe joining us?
No, Greg, it's just going to be Audrey and myself.
All right, very good. And Audrey, it's great to have you with us here. Audrey is our technology person extraordinaire. We would not be able to function without Audrey and all she does. So, Audrey, welcome to our commission meeting.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Mr. Chairman, great to have you here. Mr. Chairman, we are now at the approval of the minutes of our regular meeting of January 13. I'm sorry, approval of agenda. Approval of the agenda.
Mr. Chair, this is Urja. I move we approve the agenda as published.
Robert Reedy, second.
Bob Reedy?
Yeah,
second by Bob. Agenda approved.
Mr. Chairman, we need to take a roll call vote on the agenda.
Okay. Bob Reedy?
Aye.
Urja?
Aye.
Schreiber, aye.
All right, very good. Now we have approved our agenda. Now we're at the item to approve the minutes of our January 13 meeting.
Okay, is there a motion?
Robert Reedy, I move that we approve
the minutes.
Mr. Chair, this is Urge. I second the motion to approve the minutes of January 13.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye.
Chairman.
Yes.
I want to back up a second here for some discussion. There is one item on the agenda, or the minutes that need to be corrected. For the report item dealing with the state plan, I had said that the SRC met on December 17 when they actually met on December 16. So I would like to amend
that
the minutes
correction.
To make that correction.
Okay.
I'm not sure if anyone saw any other errors in the minutes.
No, and I sure didn't catch that. I don't think anybody else could have caught it either.
I thought that it didn't connect.
Okay.
Roll call.
Are there any other corrections or amendments to the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor of the minutes as amended, say aye.
Mr. Chair, do we need roll call vote?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
This is
Urgent.
This is Jim Council. Yeah, roll vote on all the voting today.
Okay. Urgent.
Aye.
Bob.
Aye.
I couldn't hear it.
Aye.
Oh, okay. Schreiber, aye. The minutes of that meeting were approved. As amended.
Mr. Chairman,
okay.
Thank you very much. It's going to take a little bit of time to get used to our new way of doing things here, so
yeah.
Bear with us. So we're ready for your report.
Okay, I first want to extend appreciation to Greg and the staff and John for getting this meeting on the schedule and ready. A lot of work went into it. We'll hear about some of it today, but it really... We are the first in the state to do this under the new rules where it's not a violation of the Open Meetings Act. I also would like to thank the commissioners, Greg and staff for all the calls about where when I was... confined and didn't know whether I was positive or negative. And fortunately, as we have earlier discussed informally, I tested negative for the virus, and everybody in the building where I reside have tested negative along with all staff members. And I just want to thank the commissioners and the members of the staff for checking in on me and making sure that I wasn't going to pass it on to anybody at the commission. So thank you for all of you. That's my report, Greg.
Ert, I appreciate that, and I appreciate most especially that you're negative there for the coronavirus. A little bit concerning when we saw what happened with Levita Yena breaking into the news. The last I had heard, over 50 staff and residents at Levita Yena have tested positive for the coronavirus. I think five or six?
Yeah, six.
So I'm glad, Ert, that you are safe, and others that we know there at La Vida Yena. Former Commissioner Jim Babb is safe, and Mary Willows is safe, so that's all good news there. I appreciate that. So I do, Commissioners, thank you for your participation. We are certainly in the midst of unprecedented times here with this coronavirus, with what it's doing to our state and national economy, and just the very way that we're having to do business is here. We have also been touched directly by the coronavirus. I'm very saddened to say that our former RSA liaison, Brian Miller, passed away on Monday from the coronavirus. I have known Brian for over 20 years, really good individual, a strong voice for the Vocational Rehabilitation Program, really understood our mission and our philosophy. We will certainly miss him. He was a great advocate for the program, and our thoughts and prayers certainly go out to his family. So that is definitely a sad part of my report here. So I do want to congratulate, however, the commissioners on your confirmations. All of you were confirmed as new commissioners. That took place on January 29. It was really a very exciting event. And Kelly, could you read us the exact times for the record for the confirmation for our three commissioners?
So the first person to be confirmed was actually Greg. I don't have that pulled up yet.
All right.
I will pull that up momentarily.
Why don't you pull that up when we get there, and
sure,
we can get that onto the minutes. So,
correct. I apologize. I had Windows 10 was a drama queen right before the conference call started, so I had to restart.
Yes, Trish.
I need copies from Urja and Dr. Reedy. I have art of their letters.
Yeah, this is Art. I asked Ken DeBettany to send that certificate. Did he do that?
Yeah, I've got yours. The ones I'm missing is for Urja and Dr. Reedy.
Okay, now I have no copy of my own. I sent whatever you have is what I received.
Okay, I'll scan it. Well, was it scanned to you?
Thank
you. We can do this offline for the letters. So, but Art, you were confirmed for a term that ends January 31st of 2021. Dr. Reedy, you were confirmed for a term that ends January 31st of 2023. And Urja, you were confirmed for a term that ends January 31st of 2025. So congratulations to all of you. It was really a... Sorry?
Excuse me. Art's term actually expires 2022.
Yeah, I think it expires January 31st,
2021. No, I've got the letter right here in my hand, and it says expires December 31, 2022.
All right, so I'm off by a year on that, then we push them all back. So Dr. Reedy would expire January 25th. 31st of 2024, and Urja would expire January 31st of 2026. So those would be the terms that they're filled into. So, Kelly, can you mute your phone?
Yes. I'm sorry, sir. I wasn't sure what your preference would be.
All right. So part of what took place on the 29th was the reading of a couple of certificates for Dr. Reedy, and one was also passed for Art Schreiber, acknowledging the great service for both of you as commissioners. I actually had time to read Dr. Reedy's in the Senate chamber. Dr. Reedy, your service to the state is very impressive with the National Health Service and all that you did to establish eye care here in New Mexico. I really appreciate that, and I think the Senate did as well. Your sponsor was Admiral Bill Payne, or Senator Bill Payne, who's also an admiral, a rear admiral, and really a very moving moment in the Senate. Art, your certificate as well, and Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I would like to attach the text of both of those certificates to the minutes of this meeting, if we could. Art, are you there?
Yes.
So,
hang on one moment.
Greg?
Yes, Urja.
Oh, I just wanted to be sure I didn't disconnect by accident.
Right. I think Art must have taken another call here.
I apologize. The Albuquerque Journal was on the phone wanting to know about the commission. Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, this is part of the, now, for the record, since this is being recorded, and not everyone in posterity may be aware of Art's famous sense of humor, Art is a kidder there, but
okay.
I appreciate. Okay, so Art Schreiber, we had asked you for, if you would not mind if we attach the certificates to the minutes of this meeting.
Yes.
It outlines the contributions that both you and Dr. Reedy have made to the state. The hearing that took place before the Senate Rules Committee was really fantastic. Urges confirmation process. You know, people were extremely impressed with your credentials, those of Dr. Reedy and Mr. Schreiber, so we certainly appreciate your contributions there. So we can pause here for a second. Kelly, if you want to unmute and see if you've got the exact times of the confirmation. If not, we will move on. Kelly is unmuting as we speak.
Maybe she's still muting.
Possibly. Maybe we lost Kelly.
I am sorry, sir. I am not finding it, and I know I sent it to you.
All right. No problem.
It is a problem.
It is no problem. If we come back to it later, we can find it. All right. So want to mention the budget process. We have had our budget hearing on the 14th of January. I want to thank the three commissioners for attending that budget hearing. We were able to receive, coming out of there, the legislative recommendation, which was for an $87,000 increase. However, we were able to work the session and able to get ultimately the executive recommendation approved, plus a little bit. We ended up with a recommendation for an increase of 14.97% in our budget, or $312,500. That took a lot of work. Chairman Schreiber went up two or three or four times during this session. I went up several times. Kelly and I worked the session, and one of the really special moments of the session occurred 2 days after the confirmation. Chairman Schreiber and myself were on the floor of the Senate when Kelly sang the national anthem for the Senate. So I think that was worth at least $100,000 on her budget, on our budget. So
I agree.
Yep,
great.
Absolutely. So, Kelly, thank you. And it's possible to hear a last little bit of Kelly singing the national anthem on the web archives. And we can also hear the confirmation of the senators for the commissioners as well. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to include the link to those confirmation, that confirmation hearing on the 29th and the minutes of this meeting as well. So, Kelly, congratulations, and thank you. You did a fabulous job there. So, as you all know, well, we got a $312,500 increase. An awful lot has happened since then with the coronavirus, the impact to the state budget, the collapse of oil prices. The state has gone from having about a $1 billion surplus. Kelly, congratulations on singing the anthem. You're back here.
Thank you, sir. And I did want to tell you I have the report you requested.
Oh, great. So let's go ahead and just for posterity,
and I
capture those exact times.
Okay. Okay. Dr. Reedy at 12:33 p.m. Dr. Schreiber at 12:37 p.m. And Ms. Lansing at 12:41, and Commissioner Lansing at 12:41 p.m.
Great. Thank you. So I've got that information down here. So,
and I do have a report that if the commissioners wish that you can attach to the minutes, and I have resent that to you by email just now.
What report is that, Kelly?
I wrote up a brief report memorializing this in the Senate chamber.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
Great. Do you want to give us the highlights of that, or have we had a...
Pretty much the highlights are the times, as you requested.
Okay. Well, that's all we need for the minutes here, are the times. So thank
okay.
you. So going back to the budget, we're now looking at a very, very significant state budget deficit because of the coronavirus, because of the collapse of oil prices, on the scale of perhaps a $2 billion budget deficit. So that's very unprecedented in terms of a swing of about $3 billion. So we can expect a special session to take place probably in June. We can expect that there will be significant cuts to state funds. We will likely get a cut to our budget. The only positive thing is that we had almost a 15% increase. So if we get a cut to that increase, we will at least be not quite so severely impacted. But we'll have to see what actually takes place, if they work off of what was passed in the session, or if they end up looking at
going
prior
back
fiscal year budget.
They're getting.
Right. So we will be having our regular meeting on April 23, at which time we'll be approving our operating budget. But that could be something that will be in real flux given the special session. Kevin, do you have any instructions that you've received from DFA with respect to that you could share at this time? Do we know what that will be looking like?
At this time, DFA has not provided any additional instructions other than the standard operating budget instructions to proceed as normal with the past legislation. I don't know if they're waiting to get guidance from higher level, but at this point, there's been no direction or no guidance in regards to possible budget cuts.
All right. Well, hopefully, that's an indication that the cuts will be based off of what came out of the legislative session, which would help us a little bit in that case, because we did do very well coming out of the session. But we will have to see what happens, and we're making decisions in light of that with respect to positions that we're filling. And you know, the state is in a very difficult position. We can only hope that the price of oil will rebound, but from what I have been reading, there's a huge surplus in the market, and it may take the better part of a year for that surplus to be exhausted. And with Saudi Arabia and Russia still not coming to real clear terms, we'll have to see what does take place there. So, but
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment?
Go ahead, Bob.
Bob Reedy.
Yes.
Go ahead. Just for information purposes, my friend Steve Moise, who is the head of the permanent fund, which prior to the coronavirus was up to $28 billion, and he informed me that they were going to allocate at least $2 billion from the permanent fund back to the state for other programs. So that may also play into our budgetary plans.
Right. Dr. Reed, that's a very good point. How much of the state's permanent fund is the governor and the legislature willing to dip into? You know, the more of that we can dip into, the less draconian the cuts will have to be. So New Mexico is somewhat unique in that we have a very significant rainy day fund. So that's going to help us a lot in these times, and that fund was built back up. So, Dr. Reedy, I appreciate very much your mentioning that. All right. So moving on, the agency did submit the state plan. We got the last portions of that to the Workforce Solutions Department. Kelly, can you go ahead and mute your phone again? So we submitted the last portion of that on March 12th. We'll be doing a larger report on that at our regular meeting on the 23rd. That was a difficult process, and Jim, I want to thank you for getting all of those attachments submitted. It took an awful lot of work on your part, so thank you for all you did there.
Certainly.
So I want to mention also in terms of some major developments, Sylvia Yasa has resigned. She was our technology manager. I want to thank her for really all of her work and all of the contributions that she made. We'll really, really miss her. She felt a desire to return back to Egypt, where she has a ministry that she and her husband, Akmal, are very active in, and she felt really called to go back there and provide those services, and we certainly will miss her. We wish her the best. Jim, anything you want to add on top of that?
No, sir. I think you covered it pretty well.
All right. So, staff, anything else under my report that you'd like to add here under major trends and developments? All right. So, Chairman, we're now ready to move on to unfinished business.
Okay. One mention, though, about Sylvia. Please express our deep appreciation for what she has done at the Commission for the Blind. She really was an outstanding individual, and we're going to miss her greatly.
I will definitely do that.
Go ahead, Greg. We'll start on unfinished business.
Chairman, thank you. So the item under unfinished business is an update on the Section 107 monitoring. The Rehabilitation Services Administration has decided to switch to a focused monitoring. That focused monitoring is intended to address some of the concerns over the length of the monitoring process, where it was taking a year and a half or longer to get the monitoring reports completed. The Rehabilitation Services Administration has also identified specific agencies to be monitored. One of those was the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation here in New Mexico. They were actually to have their monitoring visit on the week of the 16th of March, but as with so many other things, because of the coronavirus, that monitoring visit was canceled. The monitoring process has been put on hold here, and it is intended to start back up again late this summer. So it's going to also, I'm sure, delay whenever we get monitored. I was expecting that we will probably be monitored next year, but given the delays, it's really hard to say what's going to happen, and none of us can accurately track the path of this virus. So we had intended on having Seymour Levy come out also and do another trial monitoring for us to apply the latest monitoring instrument. But given the various executive orders and the discouragement of travel, we will need to push that off to a point where it's more prudent to do. We might be able to do it virtually, but we're also really, as a staff, just trying to deal with the onslaught of the additional work that this coronavirus has given us. So we'll have to pick a time to do that when things have really slowed down here a little bit. All of our employees are teleworking. We'll talk a little bit more about that, except for those who are essential, who are reporting to the offices. And hopefully we'll be able to return back to the monitoring and the test monitoring here this summer or this fall. I would like to have one additional test monitoring before our actual monitoring visit. I think that's a very helpful process. So, Mr. Chairman, that's my report on the update on this Section 107 monitoring.
Okay. Any questions? Moving to new business.
Mr. Chairman, the first item under new business is the approval of the Open Meetings Act resolution, revising to include meetings held during times of state and state emergencies.
Yes, this really is, we're the first to do this, and my great thanks and the commission thanks to John and Greg and all the staff for all this work, because as you will see here in a few minutes, it has been very difficult dealing with state personnel, all the things that we had to cover, especially with the Attorney General's office, because prior to this, if we'd have done this, it would have been a violation of the Open Meetings Act. And now this, what we're doing is now not a violation of the Open Meetings Act, thanks to John, the Attorney General, and all the work that the state has put into this, so we can do what we're doing in this very serious emergency.
Chairman, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I appreciate also Mr. Krankamp for really taking the lead on drafting this language. I do hate to say that technically we are not the first to adopt a Open Meetings Act resolution that contemplates the emergency. The New Mexico Council on Purchasing from Persons with Disabilities did that yesterday. I'm secretary of that council, and part of my duty there is to make sure that the council is compliant with the Open Meetings Act. So they beat us by a day, but I think we can have some solace in the fact that it was a Commission for the Blind employee that led the way there. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like Mr. Krankamp to read the additional paragraph to our Open Meetings Act resolution, which is paragraph 17. So, John, could you read that for us?
Go ahead, John.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So paragraph 17, titled Meetings Held During Times of State Emergencies. In the event that the governor declares a state of emergency due to the spread of an infectious disease, due to the spread of chemical, biological, or radiological hazards, or due to some other comparable disaster or emergency, and if postponing one or more essential or time-sensitive items of business until the conclusion of the state of emergency would be inconsistent with the proper and efficient operation of the Commission for the Blind may hold a meeting designed to preserve the health and safety of the public while also adhering to the purposes of the Open Meetings Act. This shall consist, where possible, of the members of the Commission appearing telephonically or by video webcast, with the public able to observe the proceedings at both a physical location and a video webcast or telephonic location. However, where such arrangements are not possible due to public health or safety concerns, and at the election of the chair and executive director, the commission may hold a video and or telephonic meeting subject to all of the following conditions and limitations. Subparagraph A, each member participating must be identified when speaking, all participants must be able to hear each other at the same time, and the public must be able to hear any member who speaks during the meeting. Subsection B, a video webcast or telephonic meeting may only be held if the non-essential employees of the Commission for the Blind have been directed to work from home or are otherwise unable to meet in a physical location due to the state of emergency. Subsection C, both the notice and the agenda of any video webcast or telephonic meeting shall provide information to the public on how the meeting may be accessed remotely, either through the video webcast, telephone, or similar technology. All meeting documents, except those which are exempt from disclosure as a public record, shall be available on the Commission's website before and during the meeting for public access and review, or shall be available during the meeting for downloading through whatever video webcasting service may be used for the meeting. Subsection D, at any video webcast or telephonic meeting, all votes shall be cast through a roll call vote. The chair shall suspend all discussion in the event that the audio is interrupted or becomes unintelligible. Subsection E, the Commission for the Blind shall make an audio recording of any video or telephonic meeting and within 5 business days of the meeting, post the recording on its website for a period of not less than 30 days. The Commission shall maintain a copy of the recording for a period of at least 3 years or as may otherwise be required by state or federal records retention laws, and make the recording available as may be required by the Inspection of Public Records Act. And so that's what this new language says. There's a lot of components to it. I'm happy to take any questions if anybody has anything, but it's a little bit dense. There's a lot of, you know, components to it.
Thank you, John. Any questions, commissioners? Okay.
Greg, do you want that text added to the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, how would you like to do that? We have associated the resolution with this meeting. It's on the webpage, but we could certainly put that text in here. I think it would be beneficial to memorialize that. So since John read that, I would recommend that we do that. So
yes, I agree.
Consider it then.
John, do you know of any other state agencies that have adopted similar language for their Open Meetings Act resolution besides the Council on Purchasing from People with Disabilities?
No, I do not. I would just say for the commission that the idea of putting this language into the OMA resolution was really Greg's idea. I think it's a fabulous way to establish, you know, some firm policies and procedures for how a public body can meet in a state of emergency like this. I know that, you know, I've mentioned this to several other attorneys in my division at the AG's office about, you know, the possibility of other clients doing that. But as far as I'm aware, the only other one would be the Council on Purchasing with Persons from a Disability. That's the only one that I'm aware of. And I think that, as I recall, the language that they used was mirrored on the commission. So I think that these are the only two public bodies that have taken this step so far.
Exactly. The language is virtually identical, except for obviously replacing the name of the particular body. So, again, John, I appreciate your help in drafting that language.
I hope Workforce is going to do it.
Mr. Chairman, we certainly would like this to be a model for all agencies that would strive to make sure that they're compliant with the Open Meetings Act, and we would be glad to share that with other boards. I do serve on the Workforce Board, and perhaps I'll forward this over to them. I think that it does appear that we will be shut down for, obviously, through April, perhaps most or all of May. We'll have to see ultimately what happens here with regard to how long we'll be shut down. There's also the potential for a second wave of this virus to come back, so we may find ourselves needing to engage in the social distancing more than one time here. And I think this language will address that. I certainly hope that we don't have need to use this ever again. But should we, this language will be there, and we did try to
absolutely.
Come up with
we will have to use it a week from today, however.
Yes, we will. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, any additional meetings, probably certainly through May.
Sure.
Very likely into June. And then I would expect very possibly again this fall and winter. We'll just have to see what happens
yeah.
here. No one knows for sure.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, the next item is very much a related item, which is a report on the Commission's response to the coronavirus emergency.
And Mr. Chair, Greg.
Go ahead, Urja.
I'm just wondering, do we need a motion to approve this resolution?
You are absolutely right.
Oh, goody. I'm sorry. Then.
Thank you, Urja.
Then, Mr. Chair, with that in mind, I move to approve the Open Meetings Act resolution revised to include provisions for meetings held during state emergencies.
Is there a second?
This is Reedy. I second the motion.
All right. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? By roll call vote, Urja Lansing.
Aye.
Robert Reedy.
Aye.
Arthur Schreiber, aye. Motion, resolution approved.
All right, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Urja, thank you. Appreciate that. Now we can go on to the Commission's response to the coronavirus emergency here. So, you know, we've just passed this Open Meetings Act resolution. This was a concern that I'd actually raised with Mr. Kreinkamp, and we began discussing this back on March 2nd, well ahead of the process here, anticipating that we would be in this situation. So I think it's really important that we look forward proactively to making sure that we can comply with APO laws, rules, regulations, and the Open Meetings Act is certainly one of those. So this is something that we have been looking at now for about 6 weeks here to make sure that we're compliant. And I really appreciate the guidance that John provided that helped us to really think through what we needed to do here. It's obviously difficult or impossible for the commissioners to attend, and in such circumstances, attending by telephone is a reasonable interpretation. So, again, John, thank you for that.
And, Greg, I suggest that we send this to the Foundation for Open Government, and Melanie Majors would, I'm sure, appreciate what you and John have done and the commissioners have done in passing it, and it would be beneficial for those who are members of FOG as well as others that call and need advice and help.
I think that's an excellent idea, and we would be glad to do that.
Okay. Go ahead, Greg.
So, Mr. Chairman, all of us have been looking at the spread of the coronavirus, thinking about how we can deal with this issue. It became clear by the beginning of March that this would impact us hugely, as we saw the spread in Italy. That really led us to the realization that travel bans would be forthcoming. We had all planned on, or many of us had planned on attending different conferences for the Randall Shepherd Program, CSAVR and NCSAB. We obviously have canceled those. The governor also had issued a ban on out-of-state travel, but long before that, we'd realized that we would not be able to travel out of state. On the 11th of March, I had sent out an email directing our staff to cease serving independent living consumers in nursing homes and assisted living facilities without first getting the approval of a supervisor and then only under compelling circumstances. We had seen how severely this virus was impacting seniors, and we wanted to make sure that we were protecting the most vulnerable population here. Also on the 11th, we created a special category of Newsline, Category 34, where we were providing updated information on the coronavirus. I appreciate Krista Morales helping to maintain that information category on Newsline. We have distributed announcements about the availability of that to the National Federation of the Blind listserv. I think it's probably time to send out a reminder, and I've got that email already queued up. March 11th was also a busy day. We sent our first employee home on that day due to potential exposure to the coronavirus. Again, we were ahead of the rest of the state with respect to that. We had an employee who had been potentially exposed due to travel, and that particular employee had traveled through an airport where the screeners had had a outbreak. And to protect staff, we determined that that employee needed to be sent home. Subsequent to that, the governor did issue a directive outlining the circumstances under which we ought to require that people be self-isolating, and that kind of travel was one of those. We had had a couple of other employees that had fallen into similar circumstances subsequent to that as well. Also, that Monday morning, we directed all commission employees to cancel direct meetings with consumers. and to begin the process of teleworking, which we really rolled out on the next day. Having employees provide services by telework has been very, very difficult. I appreciate, Audrey, all the work that you have done to help make that possible. You put in an awful lot of additional time. Jim, can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Certainly, certainly, Greg. We have the counselors and the teachers all had been outfitted for a while now with laptops and with a virtual private network and data, unlimited data on their commission-provided cell phones, again, with the idea that they would be able to work in the field, more so the counselors, to be able to change plans and get plans printed in the field and signed in the field, and to just improve the efficiency of that whole process of providing services to our consumers. And some of them used those features more than others. The teachers have the same gear, but they tend to, you know, they tend not to have to change plans in the field. So when it came time to actually have folks start working from home, again, working remotely, which is kind of the whole point of having this equipment, some of them were able to transition to that very, very easily because they were accustomed to using it in the field, and folks who had really not been using it a lot, it took a little longer. Some folks had technology problems, phone problems, computer problems, VPN connection issues. So again, we've been working through those, again, Greg, with the help and guidance of Audrey T., and so we really appreciate her help making that happen for all of us. And
right,
so
and it was actually March 16 when we had rolled out that directive to telework. Things have been going so quickly here. So Audrey, thank you for all the work you've done with that. We appreciate it.
Oh, you are so welcome.
So it really has added an awful lot to your plate, and really all of the management team, because we want to make sure that we're providing services. We also want to make sure that we're providing work for employees to do. So we do have employees that we're providing various kinds of learning activities to make sure that we can lessen the impact of the coronavirus in terms of some of our employees who would normally be supporting staff out in the field. So we're making sure that we can maintain our workforce and also be ready to pick up again once this shutdown ends. On the 16th, we also stopped all of our Newsline volunteers from coming into the office. The volunteers are reading remotely. We still do have Krista and Richard coming into the office. We consider Newsline to be an essential function. We have other staff who are coming into the office who are essential. Jim, do you want to describe some of the staff who are coming into the office and why that's essential?
Sure. So a lot of our administrative support staff are still coming into the office. The systems that they access, the kind of equipment that they have, the kind of the need to keep consumer materials, hard copy materials in the office and not have those in a home setting really necessitate some of those folks to continue working from the office. Of course, we have some building management folks, maintenance folks like Ray and Araya that do a great job in the Albuquerque office maintaining the building, maintaining the cleanliness and the sanitation of the building. So, again, we don't have very many folks in the Albuquerque office, but we do have a need to have some folks there. Again, in the field offices, same thing. We have the admin support individuals working in the office, and they are also kind of fielding the requests from the teachers and the counselors. And so, for example, if Pat White, because of course he's still working with his consumers, all the teachers are, but if he needs a magnifier or some type of aid or device to be sent out to a consumer, well, then he sends that request to Sherry Sykes, who is our admin person in the Roswell office, and Sherry gets that material out of Pat's bulk supply closet and packs it up and ships it out to the consumer. So they are, the admin folks are really a central and critical part of our ability to continue, you know, serving our consumers with these remote options, shipping and delivering. So that tends to be still necessary for us to support our consumers.
Right. Kevin, would you describe what we're doing in Santa Fe there?
So, commissioners, in regards to the Santa Fe office, all the staff is teleworking, with the exception of myself, who comes to the office every day. We're managing all our daily operations remotely. Any documentation coming in gets scanned immediately, it's put into a network folder, at which point the staff who's out of office can retrieve the documentation and proceed with daily operations. In regards to IT, Audrey does come in from time to time if there's issues she needs to manage or deal with, but most of the time she's providing services remotely as well. And we're accessing and utilizing every tool available we can to continue to provide operational support.
Kevin, thank you very much. And Kevin, I appreciate your work as well here. It's not been easy. We are down a human resource manager. Kevin's been doing double duties here. So, Kevin, I appreciate your staff and Audrey, and likewise, Jim, with your staff. It's been a very difficult process. We rolled out the teleworking on March 17. It's been kind of a growing experience. We are getting better at it. It's definitely a new thing as we're trying to explore here. And Kelly, your staff also are providing instruction remotely. Do you want to take a minute and describe that?
I apologize. So my staff are providing services remotely because of the nature. So that includes Braille instruction, especially for somebody who's beyond a beginner level. And as well, it includes assistive technology instruction. We are still working generally with the pre-ex population, but can expand out as needed. My staff are granted access to the building on a minimal basis in order to be certain that they have available, they can produce available materials to be either sent or delivered by non-contact drop-off of our drivers, so that everybody has the materials that they need, as well as the equipment that the staff is using, which is agency provided.
Great, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. Something else that we're doing right now is conducting wellness checks of our consumers. Audrey and Jim really worked hard to make that happen. Jim, do you want to talk about what you did there with that?
Sure. So we had made a decision to contact not only our current VR and IL consumers, but also consumers whose cases were closed in the last 5 years, again, to check on their wellness and see how they're doing. We've had some resources that, of course, we've received in terms of Department of Health resources, ways that folks could get groceries if they were experiencing some food insecurity issues, information about employment and those kinds of services. So we wanted to touch base with these consumers and former consumers to make sure that they were doing okay. And so Audrey again, you know, Audrey is just a superstar, so we appreciate her helping us kind of tweak the select statement so that we get the right consumers and the right information for those consumers, so that we then assign those, set up spreadsheets and assign them to different staff around the agency. Again, some of Kelly's team were helping us out, some of Lucy's team were helping us out, again, our independent living teachers, some of our drivers in Albuquerque and Vegas and Roswell and Cruces, again, to make these calls. And they really, Greg, I want to tell you, they really enjoyed making these calls, and they were finding, for the most part, that most folks are doing fine, and they didn't necessarily need that those additional resource numbers and resource information, but they really appreciated us giving them a call. They really appreciate that. And, of course, there are definitely ones that did request the information once we made it known, you know, what we were, why we were calling. So they appreciated that information. But and I've called some of the folks as well. You know, I had a small list of folks to call on my own. And, again, they really appreciated us making the call. So
congratulations, Jim. Excellent idea.
Mr. Chairman, we really want to make sure that we're meeting the needs there. We are also giving them the opportunity to have ongoing periodic calls to check in and see how they're doing.
Yep.
I don't know, Jim, if we've had anybody take us up on that.
You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had some. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had some. Not too many, but a few from each of the callers that I've spoken to. Have a few that have asked us to call them back and then, you know, another week or another couple of weeks to check up on them. So,
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, we've also assigned this in a way so that it is allowable with respect to the programs that our staff are working on, so that our vocational rehabilitation funded employees are calling vocational rehabilitation consumers. We still have to be following our federal funding rules at this time, and we have participated in a couple of conference calls related to federal funding, and those rules remain very, very strict. The feds have been quite adamant that our employees must be doing work that relates to the vocational rehabilitation program. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but I'm pleased that this is going well. Audrey, again, thank you for putting together that spreadsheet. It was a difficult task to pull all those consumer names. Audrey, thank you.
Greg, and Mr. Chairman, I wanted to mention that, again, Greg mentioned about the number of names. Basically, it was roughly 2,000 names, roughly. Roughly 1,300 total from independent living and roughly 700 or so from vocational rehabilitation.
Wow. Outstanding. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on the 17th of March, again, these really super busy days here, long hours for all of us. I did email Mark Schultz, the Rehabilitation Services Administration consumer. I forwarded to him an email from Seymour Levy, our fiscal consultant. I had posed certain questions to Seymour about how we could maintain our workforce, anticipating that some of our employees might not be able to perform work through telework or work from home. How do we maintain those employees? We want to make sure that we can pick up again. So if employees need to be on leave, we would like to be able to have that option. The Rehabilitation Services Administration has provided us some guidance with respect to that. And again, we'll look at that later on the agenda. Basically, all of our employees have to be compensated as is allowable under the uniform guidance, which is at 2 CFR 200.430, requires that we have written policies in place and that we treat our employees consistently regardless of their funding source. Mr. Chairman, we've also been sending informational emails out both internally to staff to make sure that they have this information for our consumers, but also through the listservs that are maintained by the National Federation of the Blind. I think people are somewhat overwhelmed with COVID-19 information, so we've really tried to be very selective in sending out information that is very authoritative, but also very useful and beneficial, trying to find information that help people to deal with the mental health aspects of the coronavirus, how to manage the stress, how to maintain healthy lifestyles, build up their own immunity, how to make sure that they are engaging in the appropriate kinds of cleaning activities, what and when are masks beneficial, and, of course, also the resources that are available. Part of the script that we are using on the wellness calls, we were calling them welfare checks, but that kind of led to a little bit of confusion, so we have tried to switch to wellness checks. People were curious about their welfare checks. Are they going to be put in the mail, or when will they get their welfare checks? So we don't want to confuse people. So, but we've provided information, as Jim had described, about some of the resources that people can get if they're not able to get food delivered. We've reached out to aging and long-term services so that should we encounter people who are having difficulty, we can connect them with appropriate resources to make sure that none of our consumers fall between the cracks. One of the things that I have on my to-do list is to send out an email, I'm sorry, a letter to the local TV news stations reminding them of the need to make sure that they're verbalizing and verbalizing in an understandable way the telephone numbers. They've actually done a pretty good job of speaking aloud the phone numbers that are on the screen with respect to resources and information, but I want to make sure that they are doing that. I've noticed a couple of times that they have referred to the number on the screen, so we want to remind them to not do that. Mentioned earlier the New Mexico Council on Purchasing from Persons with Disabilities. That entity has taken up an awful lot of my time here as well because of the need to have in place emergency contracts for cleaning. We have seen a number of circumstances in which state agencies have needed to, for a variety of reasons, including staff who were positive for the coronavirus, needed to have some intensive cleaning. So the council, which met yesterday, adopted a new procedure for the direct distribution of contracts up to $40,000. I had written that procedure originally and revised it so that the state is able to more quickly meet the needs of other entities out there. So, Kevin, Jim, Kelly, is there anything I have left off in terms of what we're doing here in response to the coronavirus that you want to mention?
So, Greg, one of the other initiatives that we've taken on is to try to make sure that all of our students, again, whether they're high school students or college students, have the technology that they need to access the online learning platforms that they have been kind of pushed to now, that colleges are all delivering their content remotely, that K through 12, and again, in our case, the high school students are also having to access online systems And so we're trying to make sure that all of our students have the right kind of gear that they need to access those that information and be successful. So we're in the middle of that process also. And again, thanks to Audrey for helping me get the lists again of the right group of people, students, and with the right information, so that we can get in touch with those students and get that accomplished for them.
Great.
Thank you, Jim, for mentioning that. Kevin, Kelly, anything else that you want to mention that we're doing here?
Hey, commissioners, this is Kevin. The other aspect that we're working on, and I might have missed it if you discussed it, was we're working quite closely with the State Personnel Office and the guidance we're receiving to assist employees who encounter situations in which they may reach one of the COVID-19 situations, and given the Family First Coronavirus Act, that the appropriate time and leave is applied for those employees. So we are working quite closely with state personnel. In fact, I have another meeting this afternoon in regards to this matter. So we're trying to do everything in our best to try to look after the well-being of our staff as well as the commission itself and our consumers.
Great, and that's a good lead-in to our next agenda item here. But before we do that, I do want to thank all of those employees who are essential and who are coming to the office. Trish, you're one of those, so I appreciate your coming into the office to make sure that mail is processed, purchase orders are taking place, make sure that we can continue to serve our consumers. So, Trish, thank you for doing that. And Kevin,
yeah, there's about 9 or 10 of us holding down the fort.
It takes quite a few employees to make sure that we're able to function. And if we're not continuing to provide vocational rehabilitation services in an allowable way, then all of our funding ceases to be allowable. So what we do and how we do it so that we can serve consumers really is dependent upon those essential employees that are able to make sure that we can continue to deliver services. If we're not delivering services, then we're not able to pay our employees in an allowable way. So we've been very careful in making sure that we are functioning allowably. So, Mr. Chairman, that's what we're doing on the coronavirus. I'd be happy to take any questions from yourself or the commissioners.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Any questions, commissioners?
Mr. Chair, it's Urja.
Yes, Urja.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but I just want to acknowledge, Greg, you, well, all of you, what you're all doing to maintain the services as keeping as much possible, serving the consumers and keeping the staff healthy and consumers healthy. It's extremely impressive, and you clearly have put in a lot of effort and many, many hours. And I also want to acknowledge you, Mr. Krankamp, for your help with the Open Meetings Act resolution.
Urja, I appreciate that, and I was going to mention, too, here in a second. I've tried to not be a difficult client for John and the Assistant Attorney General, but I have taken up an awful lot of John's time here recently with some very complicated issues around the, of course, the how we conduct these meetings, but also related to the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. So, John, sorry for taking up so much of your time.
No trouble. I'm happy to help.
I appreciate your good advice to us and the board here. It really has been very, very helpful. So,
yeah.
Urja, thank you.
Thank you, Urja, very much. And we all agree with you that this is very impressive of what the staff is doing. Go ahead, Greg. We're number C.
Yes, we are. It's the approval of the policy for authorization of leave pursuant to the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. And this is to make sure that all of our employees can be covered here. The State Personnel Office has issued a memorandum. It's updated General Memorandum 2020-001, which applies to state employees that are subject to the State Personnel Act. The Commission for the Blind, however, has a significant number of exempt employees who are not subject to the State Personnel Act. And these exempt employees, we call them EXOT. That's a term that we have always understood going back more than 20 years to mean exempt other, EXOT. Those employees provide really critical functions for the agency. They're the employees that serve as reader drivers. They're also the employees that we hire in the summer to surge for our STEP program. We also have exit employees who are hired to help us to spend the pre-ETS reserve. So those are the individuals that really are in very important positions in the agency. Some of those individuals are performing work that is conducive to telework and work from home. Some of those individuals are also essential employees and are able to therefore come to the office and provide services and to support the agency, as Kelly mentioned, to provide contact-free drop-offs and services such as that. But there are some individuals who are EXOT who may qualify for paid leave under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. And we want to make sure that we have in place a policy that meets the requirements of 22 CFR 200.430, and that was specifically referenced by David Steele during a conference call that took place, I believe, on March 30th, wherein they really emphasized the need to make sure that our employees are being paid in a way that is pursuant to written policy. And the feds have also issued a fact sheet that talks about that as well. That fact sheet was issued on April 8 and requires, again, that our employees be performing in a way that is allowable and that if they're on leave, as is allowed under the Coronavirus Response Families First Response Act, that's a rather awkward label law, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. So people who fall into one of six different categories can be eligible for paid leave. Kevin had mentioned that a little bit ago. When we have employees who have been exposed, who have become symptomatic, who have a family member who is, who've have a son or daughter who has had their school close or whose care provider is not available due to the coronavirus. Those are conditions in which people can be eligible for leave under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. They need to fill out a form. I approve that. Kevin then sends that to the State Personnel Office for their approval, and then that can be eligible for leave. So we need to develop companion policy that will allow us to provide that leave for our exempt employees. So we have spoken with the State Personnel Office Director. We have drafted this policy. I have put together also a memorandum of understanding. I'm hoping to talk to Director Coleman again this afternoon. I spoke to her briefly this morning. But we're needing the commission to adopt this policy. And basically what we are doing is using the State Personnel Office to approve our exempt employees for leave under the FFCRA. And the State Personnel Office has graciously agreed to do that. So we will simply follow that. I do not anticipate a large number. I hope it's a very small number. Ideally, it would be zero because we don't want people being negatively impacted or exposed to the virus or to contract it or to test positive for the virus. But there are certainly a number of circumstances whereby people could also be eligible for this. We have put together an intermittent leave agreement, which we're required to do either in writing or through a clear and mutual understanding between the employer and the employee anytime anyone takes intermittent leave. So, for example, if somebody has one of these six qualifying conditions, but they're still able to telework or work from home, then that means that they are eligible for intermittent leave. But we have to have an agreement in place. And because of the feds and their strict requirements for us to have internal controls, we have put together this written agreement that has some of those internal controls in place, whereby the individuals agreeing to take their time in a timely and accurate fashion. Also, the individual is agreeing to not report to the work site. This is where this gets a little bit complicated. Under the FFCRA, all employees are entitled to intermittent leave except those who report to the work site unless their qualifying condition is due to having a son or daughter whose school is closed or whose care provider is unavailable due to the coronavirus, unless they also have one of the other five conditions, in which case those individuals are not eligible to report to the work site. And if they do report to the work site, then they would not be eligible for the leave. So the law is actually very confusing. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see if Mr. Kreienkamp wants to add anything to this policy and to clarify anything that I might have not stated very clearly.
No, Greg, I have nothing to add at this point. I think you covered it.
So, Mr. Chairman, that's the policy that we're wanting to adopt today, and really the prime reason for this special meeting is so that we can get this policy in place during this pay period, which ends tomorrow, so that we can be compliant for those employees that might be exempt and might need this leave here during this pay period.
Right.
So
and all
I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah, and Greg, all of this jibes with both the feds and the state, right?
That is what we're attempting to do here. Kevin, is there anything that I have left out here that you want to add?
No, Greg, I think you've covered it all quite clearly as much as we can, given the way the language is written.
Right. It's quite confusing. You know, we definitely are wanting to comply with the federal law here.
Commissioners, this has been sent to each of us, and I hopefully you've had the opportunity to read it. Is there a motion to approve?
Mr. Chair, this is Urja. I move the approval of the policy for the authorization of leave pursuant to the Families First Coronavirus Response Act.
This is Bob, I second.
Urja Lansing has moved. Bob, did I hear you second?
Yes.
Okay. Robert Reedy has seconded. Any other discussion? Let's take a roll call vote. Urja Lansing?
Aye.
Robert Reedy?
Aye.
Driver is aye. The policy has been approved. Greg?
Great. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, the next item I'd like to defer to our meeting on the 23rd. It's the approval of the allowable cost policy and procedure. Frankly, I just did not have time to get to it here, at least not to give yourselves an adequate opportunity to review it prior to this meeting. We are wanting to make some technical changes to it. What you're hearing is the alarm in the Albuquerque office. Trish, can you mute your phone there?
My phone is muted.
Oh. Okay.
I wonder who else is in the building.
Yeah. Jim, are you
there? Oh, maybe it's coming over the phone system.
Maybe. Could be. Must be. All right. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move this item to the next meeting, which is a regular meeting set for April 23rd. As I was saying, the changes are just some technical changes, also adopting some language with respect to emergencies. I'd like to include some of the mandatory agreements that we have to have in place. Revise and improve some of the legal citations, reflect some of the knowledge that we've gained as a result of observing the monitoring process that was underway up until it was suspended here. So,
Commissioners, is there any objection? Hearing none. Urja, you approve of this?
I have no objection, Mrs. Urja.
To the 26th?
The 23rd?
The 23rd, I apologize. Thank you. Robert Reedy, you approve?
Yes.
Okay, so do I. It's moved to the next meeting, Greg.
All right. That gives me a chance to have gotten a little sleep here, which I do appreciate. So, Mr. Chairman, we are now at open discussion.
Any open discussion? Hearing.
Mr. Chair, this is Kevin Romero.
Yes.
Yes. Just as a heads up for the April 23rd meeting, as we all know, that meeting's to go over and approve the FY21 operating budget. That being said, I'll be sending information to Greg in regards to the basically a summary breakdown, so there's enough time for Greg and Jim and the commissioners to review prior to the 23rd meeting in case you guys have any questions. But that information should be going out by tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that.
Any other discussion? Hearing none. Greg, you, staff, anybody?
Jim, anything else you want to add?
Mr. Chairman, you know, I checked on the status of the conference call, and it indicates there are 12 participants. And so in our introductions this earlier at the start of the meeting, we have the three commissioners, we have John, and then we have six staff. So there are two other folks that are participating, members of the public is what I'm presuming. And so, which is pretty good. We usually don't have any members of the public that come to our meeting. So we do have
comments from the audience as the next item. So this would be the time for that.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Any members of the public who are joining us, you're certainly very, very welcome here. So thank you. Do you wish to make any comments at this point?
Any comments from the audience? Please go ahead. Speak up.
All right. I guess we have a shot. What's that?
This is Reedy, and I'd like to just add my thanks and appreciation to the staff and the other people that have been involved in this heroic effort to try to keep things rolling and stay in compliance. Thank you all very much.
Yeah, we can.
Reedy.
Commissioners, I know I speak for all of us to say we're extremely proud of you, Greg, and the staff for what you've laid out today is really very, very impressive. And thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. It's really the hard work of our staff that makes this possible. Kevin, anything else that you or Audrey would like to add here?
Greg, nothing from myself. This is Kevin.
All right. Audrey, how about you? We appreciate all that you do here and making everything work correctly. It's a challenge to keep people such as myself who are not the most technologically adept functioning at this time, so thank you.
Audrey, if I had a buttercream to present to you, I would.
Audrey, thank you.
Okay.
Kelly, how about you? Anything else you'd like to add? You're also one who keeps me working technologically. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome, sir, and I have nothing to add.
All right. Trish, anything?
No, I don't have anything. I'll be sending emails to the commissioners about the things that I need from them.
Okay. The next item is the time and place of the next meeting, and we know that it's a week from today, same time and same location, wherever we are talking from.
Well, you know, that is part of the interesting issue here. When I was setting up the notice and the agenda, I had asked John, where does this meeting take place? Normally it's a particular community or city, but, you know, here we are meeting telephonically, so there's not necessarily a fixed location.
No.
Chairman and commissioners, one important factor there, because all of you are calling in from your homes, you would not be eligible for per diem for this meeting. One of the requirements for the per diem is that it not be for a meeting where the appointee is participating from their home. So you won't be getting per diem for this meeting. We appreciate your staying at home and being safe, though.
You and John didn't cover that in your... I knew that.
Greg, I think...
But you forgot.
Greg, I think the location of this meeting was in the cloud.
It is in the clouds. Yes, it is. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, one last thing. We have set the 23rd. just in case there's something else that happens that comes up that might cause that meeting on the 23rd to not take place, or should we have technical difficulties with the calling service, or I'd like to schedule a backup meeting for sometime the following week just to be on the safe side. So we need to give ourselves time to have what would be then a special meeting. We would need to provide the required 72 hours notice. So I would suggest that it be sometime on Monday or Tuesday of the following week.
Okay. All right. You want to just make it Monday or Tuesday? Which day?
You do the 28th or 29th would be my recommendation. John, are those days good for you?
Yeah, you're talking Tuesday or Wednesday. Either of those, I think, for me, fit better.
What would be better, John?
The 28th.
The 28th? All right. And Kelly, sorry to say something.
I was actually about to say the same thing Mr. Kreinkamp was about to say, as the Tuesday and Wednesday are actually the 28th and 29th.
Right.
All right, so we decided on the 28th, Greg?
Let's do the 28th as a tentative backup special meeting just in case. So I would ask that the commissioners hold that date. Not that any of us have anything that we're planning on doing here necessarily. It's
10 o'clock again.
10 o'clock. Yes.
10 o'clock. Okay.
Right.
Hold 10 o'clock on the 28th, 10 a.m. Commissioners, and this special meeting of the New Mexico Commission for the Blind is adjourned.
Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Adjourned at 11:37.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
To all.